Hello, my name's Peter Crackle, and on behalf of CME Outfitters, I would like to welcome you and thank you for joining us for this first case of a three-part CMEO briefcase series entitled Informed Treatment Decisions for Pain Management, Changing Habits, Improving Outcomes. And we'll hope that you'll join us for the entire series of cases. As we know, case-based learning is a great way to illustrate not only the challenging patients you may see, but also it's a great way to share experiences and strategies for overcoming those challenges. When I'm lecturing at St. Francis University, I am frequently using cases that I see at the clinic. So today's CMEO briefcase is entitled, Ask Before Dispensing, Risk Assessment and Counseling of Patients Prescribed Opioids. Again, I'm Peter Crackle. I'm an adjunct assistant professor of pharmacology at St. Francis University. I teach there in the Physician Assistant Sciences program, and I'm also a community pharmacist. I work at Thompson Pharmacy on Broad Avenue, where I serve as the manager of an independent community pharmacy. I'm joined today by Vincent Capone. Vince is the Associate Medical Director and Physician Assistant at Empower 3 Center for Health. He is also a trauma physician assistant at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Altoona, where he works trauma and emergency medicine here in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Vince.
Thanks, Pete.
Let's start with an overview of our goal for today's activity. Our learning objective is to assess patients for risk of misuse and diversion of opioids using a validated tool. So let's get started, Vince, by introducing our first patient, Jen. Jen's a 32-year-old female diagnosed 6 years ago with endometriosis. She's 32 years old. She's a local resident. If she came to my pharmacy, I would have seen her before. And today she brings us a prescription for oxycodone and acetaminophen 5325 with a SIG, one tablet every 4 hours as needed. So it's going to be needed as for severe pain from her endometriosis. She got this prescription from a provider in an OBGYN practice that's about 20 miles away. One of my staff members up front, who's always paying attention at the front counter, remarks that she finds it odd that this patient wants to pay cash. Last time she was in the store, she used her insurance card. So let's start by asking our audience. So Vince, let's talk about this situation. What would be your first step with Jen?
Sure. Well, I think initial steps, particularly considering the PDMP, is that hopefully the pharmacist is not the first person to look at the PDMP with this patient. The provider definitely should be and is actually required to check the PDMP when prescribing controlled substances.
Now, Vince, in Pennsylvania, where we both practice, we do all electronic prescriptions. So at your practice over at Empower 3, are you able to even send a prescription to the pharmacy without checking the PDMP?
You can override it, right? But it the system monitors that. So it's become just part of the workflow in practices I'm familiar with that the PDMP is checked just as part of the process. When prescribing controlled substances to patients. And EMRs are generally connected to that PDMP to make it a little more convenient.
So it's more or less just a click of the button and you can pull up her PDMP profile?
Yes. And you can look at the PDMP and ascertain what other controlled substances she's been prescribed. You can see what if there's multiple pharmacies involved, what providers have prescribed them. You can see the amount and quantity, the strength and the quantity. And Pennsylvania's PDMP also allows you to check, at this time, I think 17 other states as well.
So we would have to assume that maybe that previous provider that wrote this prescription that was brought into my pharmacy probably didn't check the PDMP. So let's assume I did. So let's get back to our case. And I'm going to take a look at that PDMP. And oh my, I discovered that an identical prescription was filled about 10 days ago at another pharmacy. And like it shows on the PDMP, she paid cash, but it was written by a different provider. So what should we do now?
I think at this point, it is okay to engage in a conversation with the patient and it not be adversarial, but explain that you've seen that there have been other scripts filled, and sort of get the patient's point of view on things. The goal of the PDMP is not to have a built-in way to say no to patients, but it's to be able to prescribe in a way that addresses their pain, but also do it in a safe way that's in conjunction with other providers that you may not have direct conversations with.
Oh, exactly. So this new piece of information where we kind of turned over some stones and found out that she got a prescription at another provider's definitely is going to initiate another conversation. And in my situation where I'm not over at the store, I would pull her aside and find a quiet private area, which can be hard to do in a 1200 square foot pharmacy, but we definitely need to have this conversation and see what is going on.
I think those conversations to allow the patient to kind of explain what they're experiencing. It's not been my experience that someone with legitimate pain has set out to develop a habituation to narcotics. Along the potential pathway to dependency, there are often many opportunities to talk to that patient in a way that's not adversarial, a way that kind of allows them to explain what they're experiencing and to, in some cases, be able to address their pain and kind of counter the progress toward habituation, which we see, unfortunately, with opiate pain medications.
Right, because some of the obvious things you and I would want to look at is what has been tried to manage her endometriosis pain. Has she been on straight cycle birth control pills? Has she tried, you know, Lupron or Oralissa, any of those other medications that shut down the estrogen and progestin production? So, yeah, I think these are all valid points, but I think you have it right, Vince. We have to look at the opioid issue with this patient. So one of the things that I do at my pharmacy is I look at things as a triangle. Where does this patient live? Where is my pharmacy? And what physician did she go to? Now, with an OBGYN practice, most OBGYN practices are pretty busy and pretty full. So it wouldn't be unusual for me to find one of my OBGYN patients traveling 20, 30 miles to a clinic. So that might be a long length of this triangle, but where does this patient live? Does she live in my neighborhood? At least does she live in my zip code where my pharmacy is? So those are some things that I like to consider. And this is what I'm looking at when I look at a PDMP. I know we pharmacists all feel we provide a great deal of service and we do an excellent job, but do most patients really need to travel 50 miles? The question is, how many pharmacies did she pass up on her way to get to mine? So Vince, what are some other red flags that you and I should both be paying attention to? What kind of lands on your radar screen?
Things like multiple providers, multiple pharmacies, cash payment when the patient has insurance, all those things are red flags. I think refill requests that are early or the attempt to refill scripts at the pharmacy early should be looked at carefully. The type of provider that is writing the prescription, in the sense that if a psychiatrist were writing for opiates as opposed to an orthopedist writing for opiates, it may be looked at differently. So I think all those things bear looking at in the context of the patient in front of you.
I agree entirely. And a lot of times I just watch the behavior of the patient too. Are they pressuring me? How long is this going to take? I have to be somewhere. And one of my favorites too is they just talk too much. When a person's in that much pain that they need an opioid of that magnitude, they probably should be a little bit quieter. Some other things too that I'll notice with my patients too is they might be looking for cocktails. Are they already taking an opioid and then they might also be on a benzo or even a muscle relaxant? Of course, Soma comes to mind, carisoprodol. Carisoprodol for us old timers gets metabolized to meprobamate. So a lot of people that are seeking drugs will even refer to that as the Holy Trinity. So these are all red flags that we have to take a look at. Patient behavior. One of the things we don't have to worry so much about in Pennsylvania, Vince, as you know, is we have mandatory prescribing for all controlled substances in Pennsylvania. And there's only about 9 or 10 states that require that. So our brothers and sisters in community pharmacy in other states have to really look at the written prescription and make sure that that's legitimate too.
And you had mentioned the SIG earlier was Q4 hours. That could potentially give me pause if someone's needing at home Q4 hour opioids and they're going through the script quickly. That implies that even if they're taking it as prescribed, they would be waking up out of a sleep to take a dose of an opioid pain medication. So I think looking at the quantity of tablets or pills and the frequency of pills is important to look at.
Absolutely. The way that prescription is written is for 6 tablets. So you take 6 times 5 is 30 milligrams of oxycodone a day times its factor of 1.5. We're at 45 morphine milligram equivalents, not an astronomical amount, but certainly we want to intervene while we can. So let's assume she's in the pharmacy and I pull her aside. What are we going to talk about? Well, there's a very handy tool that's available. It's called ESPERT screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. The screening, of course, is looking at that patient and looking for those risky substance use behaviors. The brief intervention where we engage the patient in a quiet, private area and have a short conversation. And then if necessary, that referral to treatment. And that's what I think is really important is to have some people behind you, people backing you up that you can refer these type of patients to appropriate treatment rather than I'm not filling your prescription and handing it back to them. It is a challenge to do this in the pharmacy. Vince, I know you guys are doing a bang up job over at the Empower 3. Let's talk about what you're doing over there and how do you make this ESPERT work so well?
Sure. So we've adopted it in this clinic to screen every patient every time. And it screens for both substance abuse issues as well as mental health issues. To date, over the last 3 years, we've done roughly 16,000 screens. The way we use this is when the nurse is rooming a patient, they conduct the initial part of the screen. And then based on that score, it alerts the provider on sort of how to approach the patient about these issues, whether that be a brief intervention, which is essentially a conversation with the patient, and up to referrals for treatment for drug and alcohol or mental health treatment. We found it very, very useful in this clinic. It has not worked in all the places it's been implemented, and it does take some work, particularly on the front end. Some things that we've used to make it successful here is to have all of the staff buy in to the concept, right? Because it starts at reception, it goes through nursing, it goes to the provider, and then if there's referrals to services, social workers and drug and alcohol counselors, and to have everyone along that process believe in it is important so that the screening is done correctly, that it's done consistently. Consistency, I think, has also been a key point, that doing it with every patient every time matters for several reasons. One, it has not been uncommon that someone has screened completely negative for problem use on multiple occasions. And on that 5th or 6th or 7th screen, they disclose that they may be having issues with drugs or alcohol. I think it lends itself to the patient beginning to trust the screening too, that it's not set up to as a gotcha. It's set up to have an empiric way to begin very hard conversations sometimes. We continue to implement it and tweak its use to make it as user-friendly and as useful to patients and providers as we can.
All right. You know, I think you've had incredible success. It's a lot more challenging in the pharmacy because we were doing it on an iPad, and a lot of the patients more or less saw this as, oh, this is just another hurdle I have to step over to get my prescription filled. And they weren't taking it terribly serious. As you know, I'm 2 days a week over at the family practice clinic where you work, and the other 2 days a week I'm at the pharmacy. So we didn't have buy-in from our other pharmacists doing it. So I really think the ESPRT screening tool is an amazing tool. It's a very good tool to have, but you have to have a lot of buy-in from the people as well as the patients that are taking it. So,
Pete, I would like to ask you about the role of naloxone with our patient Jen that we've been discussing.
I would be kicking that around in my head a little bit because the Center for Disease Control says 50 is the magic number for morphine milligram equivalents, whereas Jen is at 45. But then again, if she's making this much of an effort to move around and get opioids, I would consider it. If she had insurance that would pay for most of it, you know, and have maybe a small copay or free, like so many of my patients do, I would probably give her one and counsel her appropriately. However, for the most part, my acute pain medication patients, if they're under 45 morphine milligram equivalents, I'm probably not going to address it with this patient. But it's definitely a conversation we need to have with many, many, many of our patients. Well, thanks, Vince. This has been a great discussion. And let's summarize our SMART goals, those specific, measurable, attainable, and relevant and timely. And that's what we hope that our audience will take from this discussion and apply it to their practice. First of all, we want you to be aware of those red flags, and we talked about a lot of them, and take a good close look at them. Also, communicate. Take an active role in educating your patients about their pain as well as their medications. And if you can get enough buy-in, employ that ESPRT screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment in patients with those risky substance use behaviors. It's all about patient care, and I think ESPRT is a very good and validated tool to do that. So thank you, Vince, and thanks to the audience for joining us today for case one of our three-part CMEO briefcase series. And we hope that you'll check out the next two cases that are available at this CME Outfitters link below. And please check out the Opioid Education Hub, where you'll find a broad range of educational activities and resources for healthcare providers and patients. We hope we've given you something to think about, and that you'll be able to integrate these risk assessment strategies into your clinical practice. Remember, work with your local providers, develop a relationship so that you can best serve your patients. Thank you so much for joining us.